pale horse. The man who sat on him was death. And hell followed with him.
You're killing me, man.
Welcome to Declarations of War, episode 170. I am your host, Alexev Carr, joined by my co-hosts, Artemis Albosa.
Howdy, howdy.
Levitain.
Good evening, everyone.
And our special guest from Hellcats Reloaded, Diane Lung.
Hey, everyone.
Alec.
Deanne.
Thank you.
Fuck you. I see his note helpfully placed after her introduction. That's fantastic. Well, well done there, Art. So, Deanne, really happy to have you on the show. We met in the NPSI Discord, or one of the NPSI Discords, and I didn't even know that Hellcats Reloaded was a thing, and I'm really excited to be talking to you here.
Well, thanks for having me on. We have kept it a little bit under the radar, but we're hoping to change that up in the near future.
Well, let's begin at the beginning. How did you get your start in EVE, and what had you been doing before you restarted the Hellcats?
I started in EVE back in late 2007. Initially, I was pretty much a solo player. Did a lot of high-sec missioning, stuck with that for a couple of years, and then in 2009, I got into factional warfare. Initially, mainly for the gear bearing, honestly, and then obviously, PvP happens in low sec, so I kind of dipped my toes into the water through that. I discovered the original Hellcats a few months after they closed up shop, naturally. But that sort of kicked off the idea of getting into piracy and out of factional warfare. So I first started off with a pirate corp, Gunpoint Diplomacy, back in 2011. I was there briefly, came back to factional warfare for a little while, and then went full-time pirate in 2012, first with the Black Rebel Rifter Club, and then the Tuskers and Calamitous Intent.
That's a pretty stellar resume you got there.
Yeah, it looks more impressive than it is. I wouldn't say that I'm, you know, the same caliber of PvPer as some of the other, particularly the Tuskers, but I do okay.
So, why LowSec? Why start there?
It was convenient. Somebody else actually convinced me to try factional warfare, because I had briefly done the NullSec thing. I think I've spent a total of, like, 3 months in NullSec Corps in my entire time in EVE. And it just wasn't for me. And I was kind of getting bored with the game, and, you know, doing more and more high-sec missions, and not really getting anything new out of it. So somebody convinced me to join Factional Warfare, and we were in LowSec anyway, and I enjoyed what I was doing back in the days of, you know, 2009 and Battlecruiser Gangs, and I just stuck with it. And all of the things that I became interested in over my PvP career happened to be in LowSec.
Hear, hear.
Yeah, I got out of high pretty quick. Went low sec and definitely happier for it, although I spend most of my time in null now.
I am personally amazed that you managed to play this game for 2 years running high sec missions.
Yeah, it wasn't like daily. I played the game on and off for 2 years. And I've unfortunately in that however long it's been, like 11 and a half or 12 years since I started playing, I haven't played consistently that entire time. There have been some significant gaps.
And significant changes in EVE as well. I mean, yeah. Back in your day, I don't think they had the whole NullSec anomaly stuff.
No, they didn't. They still had static complexes in LowSec up until like 2012. And I still remember ages ago now, I was on hiatus, and somebody that actually I worked with at the time was also an EVE player who had recently gotten back into the game at around the same time that I left it. And he started talking about queuing up skills, and I went, wait, you can queue skills now? And I think even today, that's still my one big, oh my god, this actually happened moment in Eve.
Yeah, it's definitely improved the quality of life. Probably more than any other change if you think about it. Like, not having the pressure to log in every day is pretty huge.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and removing learning skills.
Yeah.
Although, I didn't mind learning skills that much. It seemed to make sense to me. But I get that it was, like, very boring.
Yeah, I think it would have made more sense if it wasn't, like, something that everybody trained them all to 5 is, like, one of the first things you do in the game. Because if everybody does it, then it doesn't really do anything.
Yeah, that's true. And if you didn't put the time in but did wind up sticking with the game, you're really kicking yourself, and I can that just, like, from a game design perspective, doesn't make sense. You wouldn't want people to feel punished for trying the fun parts of your game and deciding to stay a long time.
Yeah, exactly.
So you mentioned that you didn't really know about Hellcats while they were still around. What wound up being your connection with Hellcats and Minxy, and how did you wind up picking up the torch there?
It evolved over a fairly long period of time. So there was my first discovering them in 2009, 2010. I think I first started hearing about the Hellcats when Minxy got elected to the CSM.
Mm-hmm.
And I had been in touch with, like, other people in LoSAC at the time, in the LoSAC pirate community. Like, I started off with, you know, like, reading blogs about LoSAC and things like that. You know, people like, you know, Flash Fresh and Kane Rizal and Wensley. And Wensley's Rifter Guide, obviously, you know, in that time period where it seemed like literally everybody in LoSAC had read that. And it was actually through Wensley that I got into Gunpoint Diplomacy initially. But Minxy's blog was also in that sphere. So it was one of the things that I was reading in the kind of the formative stages of my PvP career. And it was always something that I had regretted just missing. So fast forward to Christmas 2014. And I had been away from Eve for a little bit and had intended to come back and play more, and I paid to reset my accounts and then just didn't log in. So, like, train skills. And so I went for months of, like, paying for my account but not actually training anything. Because I was just that burned out on Eve in general. And I was like, okay, if I were to quit Eve right now, is there anything I would regret not doing? And the first and only answer that came to mind was I would regret never having been in the Hellcats. Minxy had come back to the game a few months before that, and since I'd already been in that whole LoSAC ecosystem for pretty much my entire PvP career, I sent her a Twitter message. And then ran into her somewhere in game and was like, I'm thinking of doing this. Are you cool with that?
And she was like, yeah, go for it.
Yeah, and she was really supportive.
Oh, that's awesome. So, timing-wise, why did you feel now was the right time? Was there, like, did you have interest? Were you speaking around to people about it, or was it just, like, you were at a point in your Eve career where it was, like, do or die?
It was, well, back in 2014, it was do or die, and then I started the corp, ran into some hiccups when I first started, and then real life took over and threw everything into confusion, starting in, like, early 2016, and it's only been in the last few months that I've pulled myself back together in my personal life enough that I could really focus on building up the corp. I think I came back to the game more frequently back in, like, November, and I've been playing intermittently, but much more than I used to since then.
Okay.
And it's, yeah, it felt like it was time for me to give it another try. I kind of went into it with a mentality of, you know, I'm going to do this Hellcats thing and ride it out for however long it goes, and then like, that's the last thing keeping me in Eve. So when the Hellcats are done, I'm done. But I didn't have any particular plans for where it was going to go. And because of all the real life stuff that's happened, I felt like I hadn't really given it a fair shot since I reopened the Corp in 2014.
So what is it about Hellcats that made you really want to do it? Is it the community aspect? Was it you were getting the itch for the low-sec PvP thing again? What is it that made you think this is a goal worth achieving?
I realize we haven't actually stopped and talked about what made Hellcats unique. I guess for the audience's benefit, if you haven't heard of Hellcats, A, shame on you. B, it's an all-women's PvP corp of low-sec pirates. And that was Minxie's corp for the longest time. It's how Minxie kind of got her name in Eve before she got elected to the CSM. So it's like
back when
super important.
Players could get elected to the CSM.
Well, right. So yeah, Deanne, what did it mean to you, I guess, as far as really getting out there?
Well, and that's, you actually kind of answered it for me. The fact that it was like the women's PvP corp. Nowadays, there are significantly more like women-focused groups of in PvP. I know. I think the Goons of Siren's Worm is one that I've heard mentioned. I'm sure there are others, but you know, given that I started my career and continued my career in low-sec piracy, Minxie was always a role model for me that way. Particularly since it's kind of a generational thing. Minxie's a year older than my mom, and I'm a year younger than Minxie's daughter.
Aww.
So it is very much a, you know, passing the torch kind of thing. At least I see it that way. So because she was, you know, like my space mom the way that she has been for so many other people, that really inspired me, and also the fact that, you know, in the low-sec environment that I was in when I was hearing about the Hellcats, they were the big name in terms of, well, the only name really in terms of women's PvP. And I thought that would be something really cool to do. So that was the source of my fascination with that, I guess you could call it.
Well, it definitely is really cool to do. And timely that we have you on. We initially had planned to have Deanne on like 2 weeks ago, if not maybe even 2 weeks before that. But as it happens, we are recording this episode the day after International Women's Day. So, that's auspicious timing.
It's perfectly thematic.
Yeah, worked out. We kind of talked about this a little bit before the recording, but given the timing and given the subject matter, I thought it'd be interesting if you talked a little bit about some of the challenges that women face in EVE Online. Why are corps and organizations like these so important? Kind of just walk us through what that experience is like, because I don't think a lot of EVE players will have that kind of insight. And some of the stuff that you said earlier was very interesting.
I personally have been incredibly lucky, in that I haven't had much in the way of really bad experiences with people in EVE. I know a fair number of women in EVE who have had much worse experiences than I have. I don't think EVE is necessarily any different in some ways than, you know, the toxicity that you find in other areas of, like, online gaming as it relates to women. I think it's, you know, both widely known and an understatement that women are not treated very well in a lot of corners of online gaming. I think EVE as a whole you know, we like to think that we're different than other games. One thing that's been really consistent for me the entire time I played Eve is that, you know, we've always turned our noses up at other MMOs for whatever reason. But I don't think...
they're for filthy casuals, DM.
Exactly. but I don't think that the community in Eve is that much different than others in this respect. I know that there are people who are very vocal about, you know, about supporting women in the game, and I definitely appreciate that. I also know that Eve has a remarkably small player base as far as women are concerned. I don't know how that compares to other games, and, you know, whether that's just a function of, like, the way the game is played, or whether there's, you know, just not a lot of women running into Eve. But we do have an exceptionally small female player base. And even within that player base, there's some drama at times. I've witnessed it on a few occasions. And it's not, we aren't always as cohesive as we probably need to be. I think the biggest thing that I've noticed, both in Eve and just more generally, with especially, you know, things like the Me Too movement coming up in the past couple of years, because I can't talk about, you know, women's experiences without mentioning that. There's a lot of, you know, people not speaking out against it, not speaking out against women being mistreated, not because they don't think that it's wrong, but just because they don't, it doesn't really apply to them in everyday gaming contexts. Like, if you're in a corp that doesn't have any women in it, you're not really going to think about that kind of thing because it just doesn't come up. But that sort of silence enables people who are willing to take advantage of others.
So, like, I think what you're talking about, check me on this, is people making comments, let's say, of a questionable nature, to put it generously, in spaces with no women in them, and people just letting it slide. Is that what you're speaking to?
Yeah, that's a fairly common example of it. And just more generally, the mentality of, I think this is a bad thing, but it also doesn't really apply to me, so I don't really talk about it. I think the biggest challenge that I see in, you know, improving the situation for women is getting past the, well, of course you'd say that, you're a woman, argument. But also, you know, to come at things from the opposite side, there are times when, like, women aren't great about presenting our views. I've seen a lot of, you know, not necessarily in Eve, but just in general, you know, more radical feminist activists trying to say, you know, oh, men don't count, blah, blah, blah. And it's not like that. Like, the whole point is everybody should be treated equally. I don't want to try to make guys feel bad for being guys. That's not the point.
I think that's point is well taken. Certainly the women I've had the pleasure to know of in Eve have never taken that tack with anyone I know or situations I've seen them in, but have been fairly successful. We were just talking earlier today about Katniss, one of Noir's best interceptor pilots ever, probably the game's best interceptor pilots ever, our first female director. You know, there are an endless list of women who have done quite well in Eve with different leadership styles. You have, like, Minxie on one side and Foil on the other, you know. It's a mix, but to your point, there's the population of the game is skewed quite wildly, so there's an entire corpse that just don't have any women in them at all.
Yeah, and I think the one big thing that I have kind of experienced personally is the whole, oh my god, it's a big deal that there is a girl in the corp.
Yeah.
When for most of us, like, we just want to play Eve, guys.
Yeah, that's interesting. Like, the tokenism aspect of it. You want to have more women in the game, but there's that awkward transition period where you're the first woman in any given corp. And you're like, oh my god, guys, it's a girl. What do we do?
Yeah, and then even if you have, you know, spaces primarily for women or spaces only for women, like, you know, Hellcats, both the original and my incarnation of the corp, or, you know, like the Women Gamers of Eve chat channel a while back, and, you know, similar player groups, it's, even if women have a route into the game through those groups, that doesn't really help the game as a whole acclimate to there being more women in the game. Because if you, you know, if all the women are concentrated in one place, instead of there being, like, more women in corps with guys, it doesn't really change anything.
Any closing questions, guys? Or closing thoughts from Dan?
While we've been having this conversation, I've been thinking about all of the various groups I've been in where there were women in the group. And thinking back to them, there's only one corp I've ever been in that didn't have a girl in it. And every single other one, the women were always in, like, if not a leadership position, a role of responsibility. So they weren't just a casual F1 monkey line member or whatever the low sec pirate equivalent of that would be. Is that like a selection bias thing where the women who get into Eve are also the women who will tend to take leadership and responsibility positions? Or is that some other aspect of the way that you approach playing video games? Probably a sexist comment there, but whatever.
No, I think it's. I mean, I think it's a valid question. I have been in corps where, you know, women were line members. I think a part of it is that we tend to stand out more when we are in leadership, just because there aren't that many. I think it's also that, I think this is kind of like an Eve-specific version of the glass ceiling phenomenon in real life, with, like, having to work twice as hard to get the same level of respect. So once we get over the whole initial, oh my god, there's a girl in corp, oftentimes it's, you know, women who are either good at that kind of thing anyway, in those kinds of leadership roles, and people, you know, after the initial speed bump, people, you know, look at us and go, oh, okay, she knows what she's doing. And, you know, that gets recognized.
No, even beyond that, if you're working twice as hard, and people, and you do get over that speed bump, all of a sudden you're one of the most competent, hardworking people in the corp, and who else are we going to promote?
Yeah, that's another aspect of it, too. And I think it's also just that when you're like the kind of woman who plays Eve in the first place has to be comfortable enough in her own skin to not take shit from people anyway.
Hi, Minxie.
Yeah, exactly. It's that, you know, the same traits that tend to make good leaders in Eve, women have to have them to be able to play Eve at all, in many cases. And when the requirements, as it were, for playing Eve are the same as the requirements for being a leader in Eve, then it's pretty natural to jump back and forth.
So I do have one final question, and it could not have a solid answer, but it's just a bit of a curiosity. So to set it up a bit, you mentioned previously that it tends to be the case that dudes don't speak out about the mistreatment of women because it generally doesn't come up. But then in situations where it does come up, I think back to, I used to play Overwatch a lot. Now I just follow the competitive league and that's it. But compared to almost any other video game, let alone Eve, Overwatch has a massive female community. And I've often found it to be the case that it was not uncommon for you to have one or even two women on your team if you were just casually playing Overwatch. And there would always be that one douchebag in the lobby who would be the typical toxic MMO player, or in this case, FPS player, with all of the sexist comments, spewing filth, whatnot. And then it was always a curious case of, is somebody going to try and say something about it? Because sometimes there was where the woman would speak out and defend herself, say, hey, you dude, don't be a douchebag. But then if they didn't, the question is, okay, are they just ignoring him? Have they muted him? And then if somebody speaks out against it, then there's always the comment of, oh, why are you white knighting for this girl? Like, she can deal with it herself. She doesn't need a man to do it for her. And so my question to you is, and it may not have a solid answer, is there a preference for that? Like, if a dude sees another dude being a douchebag, should the dude say, hey, don't be a douchebag? Or is that, like, white knighting? Or is this even a concept that we should have in our vernacular? Should we just forget about it and just generally not be douchebags?
Well, I mean, obviously the preferred answer would be don't be douchebags. I don't think there's a single answer to the would you prefer to, you know, be white knighted or speak for yourself? Because that varies from person to person. I do think that it doesn't help that women do tend to accuse men who speak out on their behalf of white knighting, even when that isn't their intent. I have known a few guys in various games that I've played that have been like, well, you know, I was in a, you know, I was in, you know, a lobby just like that situation you described, where there was this guy being a douchebag to a girl, and I said something about it, and then she turned around and was like, well, you're just trying to white knight for me. And the guy was going, okay, well, I get that what this other guy is doing is wrong, but if somebody's just going to turn around and ream me out for trying to stand up, then why bother? Unfortunately, the fact that men do white knight for women that way makes it a lot more complicated. My personal feeling is that it's better to stand up. It's better for guys to stand up as well as girls. Because, you know, like I was saying before, not opposing it is way too easy for the toxic douchebags to take as, you know, tacit approval. Or if not approval, then just letting it slide. And, you know, from the women's perspective, yeah, there are guys who will abuse the notion of defending us for the sake of white knighting and, like, trying to score points by doing it. But the only way that our mentality and our, you know, suspicions around that are going to change is to keep seeing a bunch of guys doing it for the right reasons.
Yeah, do it because of bothers you and the guy's being an asshole not to try to impress or be on behalf of someone else because you think they're offended.
Everybody who's standing up for you is trying to white knight, when for many women it is the case that guys will only stand up for them when they're trying to white knight and score points with them. So the only way to really change that perception is for other guys to stand up and be like, yeah, no, that's not okay. And then maybe if you happen to talk to the woman afterwards, just say, you know, I'm like, are you okay? I'm sorry if he made you uncomfortable. And then just leave it.
Cool.
So, Deanne closing thoughts. New player coming into EVE, or new woman thinking about joining EVE, looking back on your own experience, what's your advice for them, both as a player generally and as a woman in the game?
As a new player generally, find something in EVE that you like to do and keep doing it. If you find something that you enjoy enough in the game that's rewarding for you, then you'll find a way to keep doing it. For women specifically, don't be scared off from EVE by the possibility that, you know, guys will be mean to you. If you're involved enough in gaming that you've gotten to the point of wanting to play EVE, that probably won't put you off. But don't let the possibility of guys being jerks scare you away from a game that you're interested in. At the same time, be prepared for the possibility that they'll try. Just be aware of what could happen, and try to prepare yourself for that a little bit. Not saying that it necessarily will, but if it does happen, it'll be easier to deal with if you weren't caught off guard. And remember that EVE is a very diverse player base. There's so many different things to do in the game, so many different groups that you can play with. If you have a bad experience with one corp or one alliance, don't take that as being representative of the entire game. There's probably somebody else out there who would treat you better and make it easier for you to have fun in EVE.
Speaking of which, Hellcats Reloaded is recruiting.
Yes.
Yes. But also my corp, please. I'm desperate.
Yes, we are recruiting. We're doing more community building than recruiting per se at the moment. That's been my challenge as CEO, is, coming back like 5 years after the original Hellcats, I got a lot of, well, I'm comfortable where I am, but I could probably put an alt into the corp. So I'm kind of trying to focus more on doing like public roams the same way as like RVB has done Ganked, but geared towards women, rather than building up the corp per se. But I am hoping to get more people in these rooms and actually do some real women's rooms in the near future. I just haven't had the numbers for it. But if you'd like to show up, we would love to have you.
Awesome. Well, let's move into some other stories. The big one, the biggest, CCP Guard leaving CCP. The end of an era.
Mm-hmm.
Artemis, what do you think?
I think there's a fantastic opportunity for a short joke here.
Pretty much any time he's brought up, is that what you're saying?
No, because you said it's the biggest story.
Well, in many ways, CCP Guard has always been the biggest personality in the room and the smallest package. He's very short, if you've met him, but he's also one of the warmest, most thoughtful people I've ever met. I've been so happy to get to know him. Actually, it's weird timing. When he was at TwitchCon, because he did go to TwitchCon to help support the EVE streaming community, I got a chance to have some one-on-one time after everything else died down and shared a drink with him and stuff. And he's just such a cool guy to talk to, man. So much going on and the way that he thinks about the game and thinks about sort of CCP as a company and the whole Pearl Abyss thing and the streamers and what they bring to the table for the game and the possibilities there. He's just a really intelligent, amazing dude, and apparently he has a really cool opportunity. That's what made him leave. He's been working for EVE for, 15 years at least? And I don't know what this opportunity is. Maybe we'll learn shortly, but he got the chance to do something totally different that he's wanted to do and wanted to step outside of his comfort zone professionally, which I totally get. And I wish him the best of luck. he deserves absolutely every bit of success he can grab.
So when I heard the announcement, the two biggest questions on my mind were, number one, what happens to Permaband? Because that is like the best thing about FanFest every year is the new Permaband song and the music video. And like, we even have on CC right now a fantastic Permaband like Vexer skin where it's got like a hologram of the Permaband logo and their Permaband t-shirts. Like, come on, you've been pumping this thing up and then your singer's going away. What's happening?
Will he come back for the performances? Yeah, I don't know.
Like, it's just, it wouldn't be, Permaband would not be the same without CCP Guard there. I guess they do technically have the bald guy. I don't even know what his name is. I feel kind of bad.
Technically have the bald guy.
Like the other vocalist, dude. And of course, like, there's all the, I suppose it's a problem I have with music where there's the singers, there's the vocalist, and there's everybody else who makes the actual music happen. Oop, my mic. But
wow.
That's probably the wrong way to look at it, but it's the way that my brain works. In any case, that is the first question. What happens to Permaband? Second question is, CCP Guard no longer works for CCP. This means he can play Eve and be known that it is him playing Eve.
Now, yes. Granted,
he's going into a completely new work environment, knowing the way he worked at CCP, how like dedicated this dude is to his work. If his work isn't focused around Eve, that means he's probably not going to have much time for Eve. But nonetheless, who's he joining? Where's he flying?
Yeah.
How do I get a kill mail?
Who gets to recruit CCP Guard and who gets to blow up CCP Guard first? Those are the big questions. If I was him, I would avoid high sec like the plague, because he's going to get suicide ganked to shit for at least the first week.
Like, sold the kill right.
I mean, the dude could literally fund the rest of his Eve career by just self-destructing his pod and selling off his corpses, because like, you could never get a CCP Guard corpse anymore. Those things are going to be so valuable.
Ooh.
That's a creative money laundering. Like, before you leave, just create, like, 100 corpses, transfer them to your new character, and start selling them. CCP devs, if you're hearing this and thinking of quitting, there you go. Apparently his last event will be kicking off the Invasion World Tour at Easterdam, March 23rd to 25th, so if you're thinking of attending, this will be your last opportunity to see CCP Guard in his official capacity. That's going to be a pretty crazy event, I imagine, because if that is known, I think the Easterdam community will make sure it's a night that he never forgets.
Or he gets so drunk that he immediately forgets it.
Yes. Then it'll be like a hangover situation. So yeah, 16 years. Excuse me, 16 years. That's just, wow. And he'd been playing before that, I believe. He clarified as well that it's not related to any specific issue the player base might be thinking of, and I absolutely believe him on this because he's been through many more darker times with Eve. And, you know, it hasn't been a problem. I know the community team's kind of got their legs cut out from under them over the past year or two, but I don't think this is related to that. I think he's just, you know, you spend 16 years with one company, especially nowadays in the technology industry, and you get the opportunity to do something totally different. I would assume with more money, considering the pay that the CCP devs get, you know, that's an opportunity you're not passing up.
Speaking of opportunities, CCP is now hiring a new community developer.
Are they now?
They are.
That's good. At least they're going to backfill it. Poor Falcon. It's like the last guy on the wall.
Do we have a list of the entire community team? It's not just Falcon and Guard, right?
I can't name another one. Let's put it like that. It's like the ISD guys, but they're volunteers, I believe.
GMs. Are GMs part of the community team? No.
Yeah, they should be. Well, no. They're not. They're not in CCP. They're like their customer service department, basically.
Ooh.
So yeah, I don't think, at least if CCP is organized how it was when I went there, That could have changed. It's been a long time.
So I do have one note to add, just because I don't know where to add it anywhere else. But that is, it was announced only on Eve Pulse, as far as I can tell. Like, no other dev blogs, no other schedules, no other announcements have announced it, that CCP Helmar himself is going to be at Eve Down Under. So that's a thing that I thought was worth mentioning while we're on the subject of Eve meets and CCP staff.
What do you think his reception will be?
Oof.
I'm willing to bet there'll still be people bashing him for Monocle Gate.
Yeah, I could see that.
It's the
Lave, any predictions?
Time zone, too.
I got nothing here. Monocle Gate. Oh god, that brings back so many memories.
I mean, a lot of people lay the issues that Eve has faced recently at his feet. And he is the CEO, so the buck does stop with him ultimately. But, yeah, I don't know. He's an interesting figure for me because he's got the vision and the drive that made Eve Online what it is. And, you know, his commitment to the Cold Harsh universe, all that stuff got us to Eve's success. But I also think and maybe it's driven by other external factors like shareholder concerns or other things that I don't know, but it's undeniable that the ventures that CCP has focused on besides Eve haven't worked out well and have resulted in a lot of pain for their successful game and pain for their employees. So it's mixed. It's not one way or the other for me. He's not a totally positive figure. He's not a totally negative figure.
As far as receiving a not extremely bad reception, I think that CCP is starting off on the right foot with the amount of dev blogs they've released, the amount of community engagement they've been doing, the amount of keeping the player base informed about upcoming changes, like working with the CSM. CSM has had almost nothing besides positive reactions to the summits which just happened. So I think they're on the right foot. If CCP, it's not Berger is the creative director. Who's the new, like, Siegel's old job? I forget their name. In any case, if that person puts out, like Siegel does, like puts out a roadmap at one of the upcoming events, and it's not hot garbage, I think CCP Helmar will be fine. Like, based on just the amount of good stuff that's been happening so far this year, like this 64-bit client, I'm super pumped for Eve Aether Wars. I know Alec is like, yeah, I'm skeptical. I'm super pumped for it.
Well, it's a tech demo. That's why I didn't want to talk about it, because nothing's really happening there. They're slapping some Eve assets onto an experimental graphics engine. It's not like we're getting it. They're doing it as a one-time thing.
It's not a graphics engine. So I was very confused when it came out, because I'm like, what in the world is this freaking thing? So I had a tech person TLDR it for me. And the way that they explained it, if they understand it properly, is it's a server OS thing. So the way Eve servers currently work, you can't like reassign systems to different nodes except for a downtime, which is why we have the tie-dye issue and why we have fleet fight notifications, etc. If this project works, if the tech demo is successful, then the years down the road, right, this is a tech demo for tech that they have to test and they have to integrate it with Eve. It's a big deal, but it could theoretically greatly reduce, if not get rid of, tie-dye, because it could actively reassign systems to nodes and assign a single system to multiple nodes if need be, according to the stress being put on that particular system. So instead of having, oh, I didn't put in a fleet flight notification for this, now we're just in 10% tie-dye, 1% tie-dye, technically everything's broken, the system would automatically recognize or be able to cope with and reassign various systems to a single node and free up those nodes to support the system where the fight is happening and get rid of tie-dye.
Yeah, and that'd be cool if I wasn't concerned we'll have half the player population in the next 3 years.
I feel like this is just a problem of your pessimism.
I mean, it is. But it's also like...
Cool for the people who are still playing in 3 years.
Yeah, they'll have no tie-dye, because we don't have enough players to trigger it.
Well, it depends on how many the Koreans bring in. Remember, the EVE's being launched in Korea as well.
Yeah, that's actually something we probably should sort of talk about. I mean, there's not much to talk about other than it's happening. Yeah. But expect the Pacific time zone to get a little bit hotter pretty soon.
It's already got a mixture of Russian time zone, Australian time zone, Chinese time zone, which are all massive now. It's going to get nuts in that time zone, dude. Like, late UST is going to be fun because we're going to have all these new people to play with.
Mm-hmm. And for at least a little while, they'll be in cruisers and frigates. And some good fights.
In the Amar Minotaur Factional Warfare Zone, we've had a few run-ins with people. Siege Green isn't... Siege Green comes up for fights every so often. I think they're a Japanese alliance.
Mm-hmm. They're Korean, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, Korean mechanics and EVE, the solo fights. They're going to get some pretty sick outplays, I imagine.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give them time, they'll get that. I mean, look what Fraternity, well, I'm sure we'll discuss it later, but what Fraternity brought to bear on a very unlucky faction Titan.
I was going to say, looking at the calendar, the Fraternity and Legacy NIP ends like the week of March, shoot, what is that, March 17th? Because I think it ends on the 21st. So, pardon me. Yeah, I think it ends on the 21st. So our next show will be recorded just a few days after the NIP ends. So we'll get to see who is deploying for war and whatnot. But in any case...
And we're all pretty certain that's happening, right?
Fairly certain. Like, they've been hyping it up. It'd be kind of disappointing if they fail. I don't want to drag too much into NullSec politics because there's a bunch of other interesting stuff we want to talk about on the show, but I personally have been finding it amusing with Initiative's most recent deployment up north to Hakonan. Like, in Horde, the new jump gates are just completely OP, so it's like whenever there's a proper fight, Horde just takes 10 jump gates, and suddenly we're three regions across the universe fighting Initiative, and Initiative has not been doing well.
Good thing they nerfed Titan Bridges.
I know, right?
Did you guys have a referendum with the Initiative Titans and basically count them into a system?
Or so not, I didn't Ravens, for that, Ravens. Please.
Excuse me.
Yeah, so they tackled some Rorquals. They actually managed to kill the Rorquals, if I recall correctly, in LPAC 1, like the old MC pocket, in Tribute, which is in Titan Bridge range of LoSec. So don't ask me why Rorquals were mining there. But they brought in their Stuka fleet, and then they also brought in MJD Ravens for some reason. But this is a dead-end system. So NC brought in, of course, the massive Titan blob, and just, like, there's a video of it. Nika Noiser, fantastic solo PvP or Alliance Tournament Logi pilot fame, posted a video flying the Erebus, just, like, nuking everything, just one-shotting, like, bombers and everything. But after they forced them off-grid with what Rorqual Rex, basically. They camped them into that system for an hour, and then they tried to break out of the system, but by that time, the North had completely, like, covered their outgate in bubbles and had a bunch of, like, tackle jackdaws. So it was just a massacre.
Enjoy. Yeah. You're enjoying
it. Susapi's been making noises about a capital rebalance. I hope part of it is, like, making them properly vulnerable to subcaps.
I just stop supercaps and titans being useful in LoSec. But I'm probably a little bit biased.
I think
that's okay.
My...
I'm also biased in that direction.
The first thing I would say, the first change they should make is just nerf the range on Haws. There is no reason that capitals fit with subcapital weapons should have longer range than the subcapitals with no range bonuses. Like, Haws themselves have a significantly increased range compared to default subcapital weapons that I think just shouldn't be there, because you have Titans and what are they called? Freaking Dreads roaming around with massive ranges. They're literally unengageable with any sniper subcapital ship, and that just shouldn't happen when the Titan or the Dread itself doesn't even have a range bonus on it.
I mean, I would be fine if Haws left the game, to be honest.
Nah, they're way too fun. They're way too fun. You can't get rid of them. Just nerf the range. Leave the damage. Let me, like, grapple, web, and nuke noobs. But nerf the range. That's broken.
I'm speaking of, like, you got carriers. Carrier should be your anti-subcap cap, to the extent that that is a thing. Dread should be anti-carrier. And then you should have your supers be anti-dread, and then theoretically Titan should counter supercarriers.
I think the biggest problem with Titans and supercarriers, well, not biggest problem, they have plenty, but it's the multipliers on the plate and shield extenders that I find ridiculous. I mean, they have so much EHP that the only counter to a Titan is a Titan. Because, I mean, if you look on the ship bonus, they get, I think it's either a 300% to 400% bonus to the to any plate or shield extender. So they're three or four times more effective per plate. That's why they have such ridiculous EHP numbers. Like,
I wonder if it could be a thing to have a percentage modifier on Titans for subcap damage. Like, subcap weapons do 500% more damage to Titans. Because then you would really have this tactical wheel where everything works up to the point where subcaps counter Titans and you need carriers to protect them from the subcaps.
That's kind of a crazy idea, but I like that brand of crazy.
I mean, it's way outside the box, but, you know, I mean, you sort of have it in the reverse, like with the anti-fighter fighters getting a bonus to fighters and frigates.
I think you're forgetting that facts are a thing.
Okay.
I mean, that's why I dropped the HP side of things. They can still mount incredible resistances, but they become far. It becomes a bit more twitchy. And like I say, I think that I don't see how Titans and supercarriers being able to use almost all of their abilities in LoSEC is a good thing. I'd simply just ban it outright and just make LoSEC your, this is where you don't see supers being blobbed on you.
Let's be honest, Lave, you just want to be able to boost Titans.
Lave's just sad about a Citadel that recently died.
Ah, no, I'm fine, dude.
You want to talk about that real quick while we're on the subject?
Yeah, I mean, update on the Snuff War. Basically, Snuff got tired of me boosting their subcap fleets around and beating them and basically brought Titans. And long story short, we couldn't do a damn thing about it. So the thought's gone. But like I said in the last episode, you're basically shooting a low-sec alliance that can just move all its assets to an NPC station and wave at you. So it's a hollow victory as far as I'm concerned. But there you go. Sandcastles are there to be knocked down, and they're there to be rebuilt.
Yeah, that's right. Speaking of rebuilding, some big news related to the show itself. I have decided to not build the network anymore. The network's going to maintenance mode. I removed all corpse. I'm just keeping it open. Yeah, crashed. It's down. It's 404. Oh, God, that should have been the holding corp. Ah, damn it. Oh, well.
Rip.
Yeah, missed opportunities. Anyway, no more network for now. I am actually keeping the alliance open because I think of all the alliances that I've created in EVE, it's by far my favorite name-wise. So I think I'm just going to keep it in case I ever need an alliance in the future and just keep using it because it's pretty cool.
Come on, what about the old, like, freaking lizard whatever one?
Disinterested Reptile Cartel? I still think the network is a little bit better. Plus, no one joined Disinterested Reptile Cartel. You guys are all bitches. I remember distinctly that Cyan, like, pulled me aside at work. He's like, Greg, no one's going to join this stupid alliance because of the name. We've got to change the name. I'm talking to people. No one wants to join. It's all because of the name. Like, what?
Presumably, an interested reptile would have joined test.
I mean, it could have been a merger down the line. You never knew. But yeah, Disrep. Disrep Cartel. Come on. Anyway. So what are we doing instead? Well, Capitalist Army is still going strong. We've got our community in NTech 6 that's working well. The Dolphins, who are our partners in network, are going to remain there. The network's biggest accomplishment is one that I'm most proud of, which is dropping the Fortizar in 9 UI. And that is going pretty well as well. The market is now fully seated and operational. And we're seeing a lot of activity.
Jester came in and undercut all of my orders. I am so salty.
It seems like you need to go in and undercut him.
But my profit margins, bro.
It's capitalism, baby. He undercut me a few times as well. But he also bought something for me at ridiculous markup, so I feel fine about it. I think he bought, like, all my concussion bombs. Like, 200% extra.
Wow.
Market PvP is still PvP.
Yeah, it's fun as well. And there's, it's like a wide open opportunity down there, because there's relatively few sellers and a lot of buyers. So if you're coming in and you can find what people want to buy in volume and start stocking up, you can really make some fairly good money down there. And that's why we put it up. It's not just for us to sell stuff on, and we'll try to keep the market as stocked as we can, but really it's for the community to make their own opportunities. So hopefully that's something we'll see as more pilots get down there and more pilots put stuff up on the market.
That is, of course, if it survives, because it is reinforced right now.
Yeah, but it was reinforced yesterday, and that seemed to work out fine. It was reinforced earlier this week. That seemed to work out fine. CVA keeps trying. It hasn't been successful so far. They've never pushed it to a final timer. They've tried about half dozen times at this point.
And can they just not get the people together for the last push?
Forts are really hard to kill, as it turns out.
Oh!
Especially in AUTZ when you have Tickle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Tickle actually only showed up for one of them after we put it down. There were one or two reinforcement attempts, but they didn't even officially like reinforce it. At one point, they got pretty close. I think it was down like 6% shield, but I forced the fleet off. Another time, they didn't even get that far. And then they actually did reinforce it once. Tickle didn't even show up. They just couldn't get the people together, but we had a handful of interceptors led by Andrew Harwood from the Rogue Consortium, and it was, what, 5 Inties and me gunning, and we killed a bill and a half worth of Ravens, and CVA gave up.
Nice!
And then there was this time yesterday where they brought a pretty sizable fleet of Leshaks and Valgorns, actually, with almost as many Guardians as they had battleships, so my bombs were doing nothing. They basically had a repper on each ship. And that was going on for a little bit, and then downtime happened. After downtime, Tickle brought in 15 Nightmares and 10 Logis, and they ran from that.
So I ran into this bug in Horde, because we were reinforcing the Keepstar and Perimeter, and then downtime hits, and the Keepstar fully repped its shields again. Which I was
Oh, I had the opposite problem. The armor stayed at half. The timer reset from 6 minutes to 15 minutes.
So that's intentional. CCP made that to stop downtime tanking.
It's bullshit.
The bug with the shields resetting, that should not happen. Or the HP resetting.
Oh, I wish the HP reset would have been nice. But it worked out. Okay. They got down to about 50% before they gave up. But we'll see how it goes. We got another op tomorrow. It's going to be good times. What are we doing with the Capitalist Army now that we're... Oh, I should also talk about the reason why I decided to pull the plug on the network. That's kind of relevant. I was looking at our future prospects, basically. And despite the cool name, despite what we had accomplished, and I do think we had accomplished something very meaningful, we're not really competitive with the other small alliances in the game. One of our founding corps, Status Unknown, went kind of zombie. It had 2 inactives, no director, and the CEO was AFK for an indefinite period of time, and like totally out of communication as well. One of those actives wound up leaving for another corp, so they were down to 1 player, basically, maybe 2 players. And those guys were not fleeting up very often, as it was. So there's that, and there's Capitalist Army, and then our third corp, the Dolphins, who are very cool guys, but they're minors. They basically do no PvP at all.
Well,
we have 1 corpse worth of PvPers. And looking out at the landscape of EVE and the myriad of small alliances out there, I didn't really feel like we could be competitive in attracting new corporations. And I did try for quite a while to get more corps in, but... just not with much luck. You had thoughts, Art?
I was going to say, just to the credit of the Dolphins, they will try and defend themselves. Like, if you show up to fight, they will try and fight you.
Oh, no, to be clear, like...
seeking PvP.
Yeah, they'll show up for defense ops. Like, if NTAC 6C got attacked, they would be there for sure. But they wouldn't join the roams. They wouldn't join offensive operations. They wouldn't join defensive operations in Pravi. So it was a problem. And it was more than anything, it was a perception problem, right? Our kill board didn't look that great, especially compared to the numbers we had. And I just felt like we were in a bad spot. And I looked at our options, and there was one alliance out there that shared a lot of our strategic interests and my cultural values. They were active in Providence, where we had our 9UI station. They were active in Great Wildlands, where we have our NTAC 6E community. They're active in LOSEC, where some of my pilots like to go stomping. And they have really tight fleets with really high concept and skill point doctrines. And, like, cared about winning, cared about being professional. History of success in both small to medium fleet fights and small gang warfare. I was like, okay. Let's look into this. And when I looked into it, it looked pretty good. So we have joined Templus Calcif of Alliance Tournament fame.
I would like to purchase one Alec, was it a recommendation letter? Because that was fantastic. Did you, like, make a script, or was that just Alf of memory hyping them up? Because, like, wow.
No, well, I just have the show notes. No scripts.
Man, that brings back memories.
Did you used to fly with Templus, or did you fight them?
I used to play with the people who formed Templus before Templus actually formed. Back in when I first started in Factional Warfare. Even just looking at their kill board, Diana Kim, Damian Kills, like some of the people that I flew with when I first started PvPing like 10 years ago.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool bunch. You got Safoy, The Last Spartan, Retain, Gecko. It's a really cool crew that they've got there. And it's been early days. We just joined. It's like been less than 48 hours since we've actually joined the Alliance. But they've been really helpful in helping us get set up, and I'm really looking forward to flying in fleets with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we also actually, more recently, I flew with alongside some Tempest Bros in that fleet fight in Siflar that went down like a month ago, where they Snuff ended up coming and crashing the party. But somebody was trying to knock down a friend's Astra. And we bat-phoned Templus, or somebody bat-phoned Templus. And the Hellcats ended up getting the first Minikawa kill out of it.
Nice.
Oh, was this the one where, like, the RPers were fighting over an Astrahas, and then Snuff showed up,
yeah,
and then they
one.
Tried to gate home, and their Titans were tackled by freaking Rifties?
That fight. I'm friends with the person who owned the Astra.
Wow.
So, I actually showed up for the first part of that, then things got too crazy, and I actually left the field and logged off before the Minikawa died, and somehow still ended up in the kill mail. But yeah, so, and then Arcia and I were talking later on in the fight, it's like 2 hours later, and she's going, oh my god, I just started, like... There's like hundreds of people in system now over what was supposed to be a second round between her and Predator Elite Corp. Did he say jump?
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to it. We're going to see how this goes. I feel pretty good about it. We had a couple of pre-join fleets with some of our guys in their fleets, and it's just nice to fly with them. Like, it's hard to explain, but it feels like the most like Noir since I've been out of Noir, and in the sense of like how they react to losses and how they maintain their calm during weird situations, the competency of their pilots and FCs. But they're not a huge alliance. They're like 220 before we joined, something like that. So it's got that small.
Too seriously.
Yeah, they're not like try-hard elite PvP that breeds a toxic community. They just like to win and like to be professional, and they're still small enough that you have that social dynamic. So I'm quite excited, and we'll see how it works out. Let's see. Few other things. Oh, we can't skip this, especially given the pedigree of the Declarations of War podcast. Changes to war decks. More of them. These are kind of big as well.
They are freaking massive. Like, when CCP said, oh yeah, more changes coming to war deck in the future, they weren't kidding.
A long-awaited death of neutral remote reps. I could not be happier.
Literal screaming. Death, too. Like, neutral reps will get freaking Concord tokened.
I don't know. I don't remember why this wasn't on the table when I was on the CSM, but it's what we all dreamed. Like, we were CSM 7 dealt with the previous round of war deck changes. Like, the significant ones that brought the current system we have now that's getting replaced. And the neutral RR was like, it was a problem. We all wanted to stop it. But I don't even know if we talked about getting them concorded. Like, it didn't even seem like a thing that was on the table. And now it's actually happening, and it is amazing.
Well, theoretically, neutral reps was incredibly important to high-sec fleets because you needed to be able to, like, if you had two separate groups who are both aggressing the same group, right? So they both had attacking war decks. They had both initiated a war declaration against a third party. They couldn't work together. They couldn't rep each other in a single fleet if reps were concordable between those two groups. Even if you have two defenders, like both groups are defending themselves, or one group is a defender in a war deck and another group comes in with an assist, they can't be in a single fleet and rep each other anymore. So that's maybe some loss from this change. But quite frankly, the incidence of that occurring, how regularly it happened, was so small. And even looking at fights where it did happen, especially I've noticed now in the fights with Horde and Test and Perimeter, like you'll have NC and PL dudes who try and join the fleet. And it's just like, we can't rep them because then our logi will go suspect. And then all of the neutral Horde from HiSec will just come and gobble up the suspect kill mills. So like, it's time to go away. It may have been important in the past, but not anymore.
Well said.
Yeah, this is long, long, long overdue, and may end up killing or certainly breaking or forcing a few well-known high-sec corporations to change, but this mechanic needs to die.
Well, so there's that mechanic, and then I think what could be the nail in the coffin for the big high-sec pirate groups is the headquarters mechanic. So it was announced that this was a change or a suggestion from the community for literally years, where in order to make a war deck, in order to make an aggressive war deck, you have to declare a headquarters. It's a structure, a citadel in this particular case, that's your headquarters. And if the defenders kill it, or rather if anybody kills it, if that structure dies, the war deck is canceled. And this is the big one, that corp, whoever had the HQ that died, cannot declare war against the entity who they had war decked for 2 weeks. So
now, this is something that had come up earlier, and I'm curious as to getting everybody's perspective on it. Because one consequence of this that is very severe is that, as you mentioned, it's going to change these high-sec war decks, and the reason why it's going to change these high-sec war decks is because large alliances, like your Goonswarms and your Pandemic Hordes, can just go kill these citadels almost immediately, and they're going to be basically unstoppable attempting to do that. They're basically going to be protected from war decks, period, which is one of the reasons I didn't support it a couple years back when I was on the CSM. Lave, Art, Deanne, what do you guys think about that? I mean, you're basically going to have Test and Pandemic Horde and all these guys basically war deck proof forever.
Well, they're not war deck proof because there's nothing to stop you from sticking down a cheap Astra House, which will cost you very little in terms of fighting opportunity, and then sticking it in the legitimate arse end of nowhere.
Plus, if I wanted to war deck Test, or even Goons for that matter, right now they have a bunch of offensive wars because they're currently fighting over perimeter. and presumably that fighting will continue. So if I wanted to get in on a war deck with Test or Goonswarm or any other major Nullsec entity, I just go in as a defender on one of the other war decks that they have, and now I'm not paying a bill. I don't have any structures in space that have to be vulnerable. Shoot, I don't have to have any structures at all.
Yep. That assumes that the war in perimeter is on. It may not be.
It's going to continue. It may not be, but
it hadn't been going for years. It was like something that just happened this past year, a year and a half.
That's true, but whoever owns the perimeter will always have to be clearing out the riffraff, right? Even if there's not another major Nullsec entity, like Horde is in this case, trying to take over the market or disrupt the market, there will always be profit-minded individuals attempting to take a cut of that market, attempting to get in on that profit. And so, like I said, when Tests initially announced that they were going to take us over, taking over the market isn't the big deal. It's maintaining the market. It's keeping the monopoly, killing off the competition. That is the biggest hurdle, and whoever owns that market, that is going to be a constant thing they have to do, and that's going to be constant war decks that will put them vulnerable to being decked or having these high-sec pirate groups being able to attack them without having to post up citadels themselves. As far as your point about them being invulnerable, maybe for the first few weeks, months or so, but judging by the sentiment, at least from within Horde, there are some guys who enjoy the high-sec ops, even within MC, but high-sec ops really wear on you, especially if they're just structure grinds where you know you're not going to get a fight. So I think that, sure, just a few weeks, maybe the first few months, they'll go in and they'll bash these structures and boom, they're invulnerable, but they're going to get tired of it pretty freaking quick. And so I think eventually somebody will find a trick, or they'll just, the Nullsec entities will get tired of trying to deal with killing off all of the structures, and that'll be the end of it. Because all it takes is you can swap corps to get into an aggressive alliance or an aggressive war deck. So all it takes is these high-sec pirate groups who are very adept at swapping corporations, swapping alliances in order to abuse or utilize the mechanics of high-sec wars as they are currently, in order to minimize the number of people who can shoot at them and maximize the number of people they can shoot. So I would not be surprised if they just have a bunch of dummy groups with Raitarus out in the middle of like some Nullsec or Highsec Island, and they set those as their HQ, they declare wars, and whichever one survives, oh, that's the corp they're joining today.
That's possible. I mean, you're still going to have the restrictions on leaving and joining corps at war.
Yeah, I didn't read too much into the details on how that restriction takes place. Because I know it was meant to stop a bug, but I don't know the full...
It's meant to stop exactly what you're talking about. We're pretty close. I mean, they could still do it, but it's going to be inconvenient. They won't be able to do it every day. It'll take, like, a couple days.
Yeah, then it's just a question of, like, is the inconvenience worth it?
I mean, it might be.
The amount of feeding that null bears do is worth it.
I mean, if they're tasked with either doing that or changing the playstyle they've relied on for 10, 15 years, they may elect to just go through the awkwardness, you know?
Yeah, and we've seen that in all sorts of places around EVE over the years. I mean, these guys are so invested in that particular way of playing EVE that, you know, I mean, there'll probably be some of them who, like, do the Bitterbet thing and, you know, complain that their version of EVE is dying or whatever. And then they'll either deal with it or quit.
Yeah. True, true. Like
everybody does and has always done for the entire history of the game. And even the people who quit will probably come back in a few years and be like, huh, maybe this wasn't so bad after all.
And I think as far as value to the game, this might be a bit controversial to say, but I don't think a lot of these groups are going to be that missed.
I don't know. It made high-sec dangerous. I like it.
Remote rep Jita campers? I don't know.
Yeah, it made high-sec dangerous, dude.
But for a very small percent of the population.
It made it dangerous for a large percentage of the population. It made it fun for a small percentage of the population.
Okay.
Now, maybe I'm in the minority of the community who thinks that having it being dangerous for more people, even though it's not as fun, is a good thing, but...
I'd like fun danger. We can have that.
I mean, I think it's good in principle for that to be an option. But I can also see how if you're on the receiving end of it, it would end up being a pain in the ass, frankly.
Well, if you want to fully kill their playstyle, increase the redock timer from 1 minute to 2 minutes. That'll be about it. It'll be done.
Mm-hmm. It's only so far they can adapt.
So, go on.
But yeah, even for me as someone who, like, doesn't really deal much with war decks, particularly in high sec, you know, that's one of the best things about being a pirate is, you know, can you shoot it? Well, is it on overview? Yes. I like the direction that they're taking by doing this. I definitely agree from what I have seen of high sec wars that neutral logi is a huge problem, and I like the idea of it going away. The same way that I liked the idea of, you know, the ECM changes last year, which affected me much more directly. But yeah, I think even if it doesn't affect me, I think in principle it's a good move.
We should also mention that another change they made was to links. So now instead of the link person getting conk or dokened, it's that the link simply won't apply to fleet mates if they don't meet certain conditions, which effectively means that you can't use neutral links anymore in a war deck scenario. They did mention that there are technical issues involving them being able to do that for, like, duels, right? So if you still get a duel request from some dude in Jita, don't take it, because they're going to have neutral links. They may not have neutral reps anymore, but they certainly can have neutral links that you just can't do anything about. And that's something CCP could not address because of technical issues. But neutral links can't happen.
Bada bing.
Now, is that just in high sec, or is that, like, overall?
That's just in high sec. So, if I recall correctly, in fact, let me look up the specific things that they said that you have to meet. So, the person has to be involved in a war, normal wars, or faction warfare. So, I guess it could be low sec. They have to not share a corporation, alliance, or faction warfare side with the person in their fleet. And they have to be engaged in PvP. So they have to have a log-off timer, not an aggression timer, a log-off timer. If those three conditions are met, and let me see if it says, and they're in high sec. Nope, it's just if those three conditions are met, and they are in high sec, then the links won't apply for them. So it means nothing for low sec.
Oh, okay. Still, though, I think overall it's a step in the right direction. But something
that said,
principle has always bothered me about, you know, it's obviously not as bad nowadays as when, like, everybody had Loki boosts or whatever, but
all the days of half a dozen claymores just orbiting the station.
Yeah.
I mean, it's definitely interesting. I've heard a lot of people interested in trying high sec war decks again, so they've at least managed to restart player interest with these changes, which is pretty good signal, I think.
Could the Merc lifestyle be coming back? Speaking of gameplays that CCP killed off.
Well, if the Merc lifestyle is really energized by doing lots of structure grinds, yeah, perhaps. That said, grinding citadels isn't that bad. It's 30 minutes.
Yeah, it's fairly
even less.
Yeah, this first time, obviously, you can dictate the timing, and high sec should be fairly easy for logistics, provided they don't face it in solitude.
Well, even if they did, solitude's nice.
And to be
plus,
fair,
if everyone's in solitude, you just base your Merc outfit in solitude.
Yeah.
Or Southern Syndicate, which is a pretty nice place to live.
One final note on the Lynx thing, Dion. I think there are no, like, low sec people on the CSM right now, so I suspect that if you made the recommendation to extend that to apply to low sec as well, it may get some traction. I just think that's an idea that maybe just literally has not come up the CCP yet, because they don't have enough interaction with people from low sec.
Another one of those things where if it's not relevant, people don't mention it. But yeah, that's a good point. I might see if I can talk to a couple of people about that. I need to talk to Sweetonia about another very, like, niche proposal that I had sent to him at one point a while back, just about balance between, like, medium autocannons and pulse lasers.
Ooh, that's interesting. We don't have time to get into it, but I'd love to talk about that at some point. Transitioning to a few final notes. A couple big kills. As we alluded to, there was a Komodo that got killed by Fraternity. Basically, just pure by Doomsday volleying. Now, killing a Komodo is one thing. I actually think the more interesting aspect of this is that Frat is fielding enough Titans to Doomsday other Titans now, and they're willing to throw that out against Test, which, if there's a war coming up, that's going to be pretty interesting. Also of note, a Gold Magnet got killed, a Virtuoso, which is an Alliance tournament ship, also got killed, and a Whiptail got brought down all in the past week or so.
My favorite part about this is the Gold Magnate and the Virtuoso both were hunted and killed by the same dude.
What?
Same guy. What he does is he injects neutral alts into Hunter Asteros and then flies them around to catch hunters. That's all. This guy hunts hunters. So if you look at his kill board, it's just full of Bluff battleships, AT ships, people going around trying to be elite PvPers dunking on things. He hunts those guys. And he uses, like, he'll inject up an Astero alt, it gets burns, injects a new one. Like, I love the fit for the one he used to catch the Virtuoso, because it's a Serpentis ship. It's super weird. It's got like 90% webs and a blaster bonus, plus it's a stealth bomber, but it's damage locked. So the dude fit X-type thermal and kinetic hardeners to his tackle Astero so he could tackle it.
Nice.
Sick.
But the Gold Magnate, to put this into context, those things are super freaking valuable, and this is only the second one to ever die, and the first one to ever die in, like, proper PvP. The only other one to die was a dude who was quitting the game, so he gave the Gold Magnate to an alt that he made called I Quit Flysafe 07, and then he used his main to smart bomb it in a Proteus.
I'd been tracking that guy when I was in MA, looking at that thing, trying to get people to come and kill it. I was very sad when that died.
Yeah, that's exactly the kind of thing I would expect in EVE.
Finally, I want to give a shout-out to our sponsor, EVE Onion, who has their own take on the CCP Guard farewell story, which includes some exclusive lyrics from a rendition of Don't Cry For Me, Argentina, which Guard has graciously given the community before he left. So if you want to go check that out, head to eveonion.com. That's eveonion.com. We break the news of EVE Online.
How much do I have to pay to get Alec to perform this exclusive rendition?
I'm not going to do it. Let's see here.
What are we talking here, Artemis?
Oh, I'd have to re-listen to Don't Cry For Me, Argentina to really get all the... I mean, everyone knows the chorus, but...
I'm thinking, like, exclusively ISK here. We're not going to be, like, no sexual favors or anything going down here. Like, pure ISK numbers.
What are we I will do it for a Rorqual, a fitted Rorqual. So anyone out there in the community that wants to hear me sing CCP Guard's final farewell song, to the tune of Don't Cry For Me, Argentina, if you have a Rorqual that you'd like to donate my way, it can happen.
Do you want a combat Rorqual?
I want to work with the drones. I could probably take care of the rest. Hull and drones, I'll do it. Just throwing it out there. All right. Some host highlights. I've got a cool one. So we alluded to the Fortizar attacks earlier, and I have to say, gunning the Fortizar, especially not yesterday's op, but the one previous to that with the Ravens, oh my god, so much fun. Probably the, I don't know, I've had a lot of fun in EVE recently, but it's up there for most fun I've had this year, easily. It's so fun. Like a fucking Death Star. It's great. So
you know, we've got an anti-cap fit, I've got bomb launchers on it, it's got fighters. And when they first landed their Raven fleet, my first thought was, well, that's a fuckload of jumping Ravens. I can't really do anything to that. And so I didn't even try to shoot them for a while. And then after about 10-15% armor, I thought to myself, well, yeah, they only have a little bit of logi. Maybe they can't keep up with every ship if I start throwing bombs at it, because it's going to damage the whole fleet. So I started throwing some bombs. And the bombs were in, I'm like, oh, it's actually doing a lot of damage. Okay. Well, let me throw some target painters out there, and let's see if I, what happens if I throw some missiles out. And I got pretty close to killing something. I was like, okay. What if I jam two of their logis? Let's see what that does. What if I throw some neutralizers out as well? And, you know, all of a sudden I'm bringing down the occasional Raven. Like, oh, this is very interesting. And they're jumping around to try to dodge the bombs, which, of course, follow them. They're homing. So eventually they all land, and there's, like, massive alpha strikes, which is funny to watch. And then every once in a while, one of their Ravens would land out of position because they had jumped the fleet while this guy was in warp. And that's when Andrew's interceptors, from clever use of neutral tunes and Rogue Consortium and all those guys would come out. They'd probe this guy down in like 1 second, drop inties on him, hold him in place. And then while I am lobbing bombs and missiles at the main fleet, I switch over to the fighter control interface and I'm popping out the fighters to go after this poor bastard. And I'm like hopping back and forth and micromanaging and stuff, and you know, I didn't have to worry about flying anywhere, so I could focus fully on target selection. And it was just interesting. I don't know, it was a lot of fun. So reinforce me more, baby. Bring it on, CBA. Artemis?
So my highlight is, like, for people who have been in Horde, I feel like it's a very standard thing that tends to happen. But for me, it was fun because it was the first time that it happened. So it was just sitting around doing nothing, really. I had some ratting VNIs up in the background watching some TV or whatever. And ping goes out, hey, there's an Orthrus fleet in BWF. Let's go kill it, guys. And it was Iron Armada in NWD HML, like, full kite Orthruses. If I recall correctly, there were 500 MN Orthruses. So, like, these things were going freaking 5k a second or whatever. And their whole idea was, Horde is just going to feed to us. We'll fly around, we can't be caught, and we'll just kill off the feed. And initially, that's sort of what happened. So, one of the standard doctrines for the Horde response fleet is just literal throwaway stabbers. They're like 5 million ISK apiece. And the idea is you get an FC or somebody with a probing ult, just throw these things at whatever the hostiles are, and if we kill one thing, we're ISK positive, and at the very least, people have some fun doing it. So we did that for a while. I was flying tackle. Well, initially I was on a stabber, but the stabber died, as it does. And they're like, you know what? We need some tackle. So I grabbed some tackle, grabbed a Jaguar, was the hero tackle on a couple of kills, and then that died. And then I went and got another Jaguar, but then a second FC hopped on. He came home from work. He's like, hey guys, I've actually fought this fleet before. What you got to do is swap to Cormorants. And we're like, the Corms are too slow, dude. They'll just outrun them. Like, yeah, you got the range, but they're too slow. He's like, no. Cormorants and MJ Desis. So what you do is you warp on them as close as you can with MJ Desis, have Spike permaloaded, and then shoot them. And once they're out of range, MJD. And keep doing it over and over and over again. And even what you really want to do is when they're about 50 kilometers away, then you MJD in front of them so that they're running at you and then running away from you and keep on doing it. So we all quickly reship into MJ, Desis, and Corms. And the first time we catch these guys, they're off where we can see them and we shoot at them. Plan goes off without a hitch. We land, we shoot them, a couple of them die, then we MJD in front of them and half their fleet is just dead.
Nice.
A single MJD cycle. And they all warp off and leave. It was so much fun. It's like it really hit home, number one, how super fun it is even when you're feeding. Like, if you have a culture of feeding, but it's just like having fun for killing stuff and the ships are really cheap, it doesn't really matter. But then also the whole, like, old FC comes home from where it's like, yeah, I've been here before. I know how to beat this. This is how you do it. And just boom, it's done. The entire fleet's wiped. It was great.
Now, how many quorums did it take to get those results?
So because the Orthruses were like 500 MN fit, they had zero tank. Like, they didn't even have a freaking damage control, if I remember properly.
Oh, Lord. So
Jesus.
We had two MJ Desis, one Prober, and like 15, 10 quorums, if I recall correctly. At least of the initial undock. Like, there were more people in fleet. There were more people trying to get in on it, but we were trying to do it quick, and so we undocked with less. I need to go back to my kill board and double check those numbers.
Tank your ships, guys. Tank your ships. Come on. Lave?
I don't really have much of a highlight this kind of week. I've been really busy on the real life side of things, which is kind of the best way of saying I win Eve. When you can step away from the game for a while and say, nope.
And Deanne, I think you're in sort of the same boat.
Yeah. If we go a little bit further back, I mentioned that battle in Sifilar, or the RP or Citadel, that was about a month ago. 2 weeks, I'd have to say, I ran a small gang out to, from where I base in Amar Losak, out to Providence, and actually stopped in at the 9UI for it.
Whoop, whoop.
And, yeah, it was, I wouldn't say it was, like, a hugely significant fleet or anything, it's just, it was the first time in, I think, ever that I've actually FC'd small gang in Null, because I've just spent so much time in Losak over the years that I've always kept thinking of Null as, like, the place with, you know, scary bubbles and stuff, and why can't I warp off? I think, like, early in my PvP career, I lost an expensive pod and just never really got over it or something. But yeah, so that was the first time I've FC'd in Null in ages, possibly ever. And we just, like, we hung around in Pravi and then went down to Catch and, you know, camped a gate and shot at Brave for a while. And it was just, like, really chill and opening up new opportunities for me, especially with the 9UI4 there, so that I don't have to worry as much about logistics. I can just go there and, like, buy stuff, which is really nice when I'm trying to set up staging fleets like that. But other than that, yeah, I have also been winning Eve.
I'm excited that the 9UI4 is working out. It's honestly lived longer than I expected it to. So, which I guess sounds weird to say, considering, like, the time, effort, and money that went into getting it up in the first place, but I really expected, like, within the first 24 hours for CVA to reinforce it and then put a massive, like, super capital fleet on field or something like that. I don't know why I expected that necessarily, but I just kind of assumed that's how things would go. Well, it's done pretty well, and it's great to see the community getting some value out of it.
As you say, you're too used to fighting the old Yin Tan CVA.
They are yinless. That's a good point. A couple shout-outs. Close things out here. I want to give a shout to, I hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly, Katia Say, a pilot who has accomplished her 9-year journey of visiting every system in Eve, touring every system in Eve, like actually taking pics and stuff. That's over 7,800 systems without a single death. That's amazing. So I want to give props to Minxy and Signal Cartel as well for assisting her with this and helping her celebrate what is really a pretty intrepid journey. I'm actually going to reach out to Katya and we'll see if I can get her on the show, because I imagine she has some very interesting stories to tell about New Eden.
Certainly, Late? If you...
Oh, yeah.
I was going to say, they did put a blog about this. So throughout the entire thing, just if you are used to enjoy reading all of the Eve blogs and are disappointed like I am about the distinct lack of them nowadays, you can go and check out Katya's journey on her blog.
Yeah, I'll throw that in the show notes.
And my shout out today is over to one of our one of the old Noir/MC/NC guys, Praetorian. There's a lot of logistics for our little kind of crew that's in there, and Jenny just keeping active right now while a few of us have been busy off game and just been kind of not flying the EVE flag, he's been kind of continuing to represent there. So, good stuff, buddy. Keep it up.
My shout-out goes to CCB Guard for being freaking awesome and also putting out a really fantastic, like, going away dev blog. If he had just sort of peaced out on Twitter like a bunch of the other CCP devs had done, I think the community would have stood a chance of being in a massive uproar. But he put a lot of time and effort and thought into a proper way to say goodbye, and I think op success.
And since it is, well, a day late, but since it's why I'm here and kind of our theme for the week, I'd like to give my shout out to all the other women who play EVE, both the ones who have guided and inspired me over the years, ones I've flown with, both who are playing the game and who are no longer with us, but hopefully will be back in the future, and to all the women who will hopefully be inspired to join the game and see what we all love about it.
Awesome. And with that, head to our show. Head to our show poll. DeclarationsOfWar.com. I think the poll is going to be the likelihood you think there's going to be open hostility, let's say. Maybe not necessarily sob changes, but attempts or major fights between Test and Frat in the first, what do you guys think, week, 2 weeks? After the nip, what do you guys think would be reasonable?
I'd say 2 weeks.
2 weeks?
I want to say, if there is not a major fight within 24 hours of the first of the nip breaking, I will be surprised.
2 weeks? All right, we'll do 2 weeks. I kind of agree with Art. It'll probably be sooner rather than later. Maybe we could actually have that as a three-part poll, whether it'll be no fighting at all, major battles within a week, and major battles within 2 weeks, and we'll see what wins. Also a reminder, Capitalist Army is recruiting. Now that we have joined Templus Calcif, we are looking for essentially PvP mains only. You can have mining characters, you can do some mining, but we're mainly interested in recruiting PvPers right now. And that's it. We're hoping to attract some pretty talented PvPers to the corp, especially now that we're in this environment where you guys can really strut your stuff. Capitalist Army has always had a bit of a noir streak in terms of the standards that I put out there, but it's also been, you know, a little casual as well, given that it's essentially a retirement corp. But if you've been listening to the show and, you know, you've been wanting to get into some high-end PvP, this is a really great opportunity. So I'd encourage you to reach out to us and join the Capitalist Army. Capitalist Space Chat in-game for more info. Wherever you are, good hunting, listeners.